sermonette today I entitled Spotting Allegory. And by that, I don't remember now who asked the question, but somebody asked me the question about when you could determine that something was allegory and not just simply the statement of what was going on at the time. And there's a distinction to be made. Not everything that is spoken to us in the Bible is basing allegory on it, but a great many things are related allegorically to other things beside the obvious thing that you're looking at. But the question is, how do we know when some scripture is allegorical? Some are not. How can we make a distinction in the scripture that we look at as to whether or not it is allegorical? So what I want to try and do here, it's not that easy an assignment, but what I wanted to do here is to provide you with three methods or three tools that we have at our disposal to determine whether or not a verse of Scripture is allegorical or whether it's just addressing the obvious at the time. And there's some of both to be found in the Scriptures. Here's the first thing that I put down here, is to build a fund of knowledge on the subject. So if you're looking at something and it's addressing a subject that you think might be allegorical, take the time to build a fund of knowledge on that subject. You can do it by searching the Bible for the subject of the scripture. But you need to be sure, I mean, you can build a fund of knowledge, and there are other sources beside the Bible from which you can draw knowledge. Some of them are valid, and some of them are not valid. Be sure the source of knowledge on your subject, the thing that you're interested in, is a valid source. Here's what we look at as being a certainty for validity of knowledge. 2 Timothy 3:16. I use 3:16. I think of 3:16 and remember this scripture by the fact that so many people look at and know probably as much of a New Testament scripture as there is, John 3:16. So it's the 3:16 part that I can put my finger right on this scripture. All scripture, it says, that's a big set of words there. Now, in saying all scripture, Paul was writing before the New Testament was written. So he writes this letter to Timothy. It ultimately, 300 years later, becomes a part of the New Testament. But it was not anything that he could look at. There was nothing in the New Testament that he could consider scripture at that time. At the time he was writing, all scripture meant all Old Testament scriptures. In fact, time he was writing, the Old Testament had not even been canonized. Old Testament was canonized around the year 100. And so there were these scriptures. There was the book of Isaiah. There was the book of Jeremiah. There was the book of Ezekiel, Malachi. You know, the Old Testament scriptures. They were there and available, and that's what he meant by that. But they weren't collated and brought together in a single book that you could open and turn back and forth. So what a set of resources we have today, besides the fact that we have Bible programs and we can search out a subject or the subject of a sermon in the Bible. So that's the Bible here is saying all scripture is given by, Paul is saying in 2 Timothy, all scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for, goes through a litany of things here, doctrine, reproof, correction, and instruction of righteousness. We could probably give a sermon on each one of those things, but all scripture is valid for those four things. That's what it's saying. However, we may find, and again, this is building a fund of knowledge on the subject, that not all scripture is translated correctly. There are translational errors in the English language versions that we have. First of all, the Bible was written in either Greek or Aramaic or Hebrew, and then it was translated, first of all, into Latin, and then the Latin translation was used to translate it into English. So it's been through a couple of translations and translators who might or might not have understood correctly the meaning of what they were translating. Mostly it's correct. So we usually look at King James. It's mostly correct, but there can be problems. Here's an example. Mark chapter 16 and verse 18, a segment of scripture that we look at and think of as being very important, because here Christ is giving his disciples a commission to go forth into all the world. And he's saying that these signs will follow his disciples as they go throughout the world. And here's one that misunderstood maybe by the translators, but it's a question that you might not find to be valid. They shall take up serpents. Now, there are people who take this literally, who handle snakes, and ever so often we'll find on the news somebody bitten by a serpent, handling them in the name of religion, and they die, or they get into serious difficulties as a result of trying to follow this scripture. They shall take up serpents. I have not heard of anyone drinking any deadly thing, and it shall not hurt them. They shall lay hands on the sick, and they shall recover, as we sing it in the hymn that we have, they shall be made well. But here's the thing at this point. Build a fund of knowledge on the subject, and then check it to see that the scripture that you have is translated correctly. And so that's one tool. Here's a second tool. Scripture is like a hand in a glove, I put it down. The scripture needs to be consistent with all the scripture that you're looking at needs to be consistent with all of the other scriptures on the subject. If there is a conflict between the scripture that you're reading and other scriptures, then something is wrong. If all scripture is given by inspiration of God, then you need to, they need to agree with one another. And if they're not agreeing with one another, if they demonstrate conflict, then you need to resolve that conflict before you decide on whether or not you're talking about an allegory. So hand in glove, that's the second second tool you have to work with. Third one is a very obvious one. Oftentimes, Scripture will define itself as to whether or not it's an allegory. Here's an example. Genesis chapter 4, verse 24. There Paul's writing about the two covenants and how they are an allegory. The two women who were the mothers of two children. Here he says in Galatians 4, 24, these things are allegory. For these are the two covenants, the one from Mount Sinai, which genders to bondage, which is in Hagar. I think you'll find also that Jerusalem is defined as being an allegory, and that it says the church is, the Jerusalem is the mother of us all, which is God's church. Pharaoh is defined as well in the book of Romans as being a allegorical person reflecting on Satan the devil. Egypt being the world around us, and so on. So some of these are clearly defined as allegories, but are not so clearly identified in the Scriptures. There are other things that are not so clearly defined as allegory in the Scripture. So look for that. Look for whether or not the Scripture the Scripture surrounding it defines the thing as an allegory. If not, then you've got more of a search. Isaiah chapter 28, verse 10, it says that precept must be upon precept as we read and study and learn the Scriptures. The Scriptures must be precept upon precept. You're not going to find everything that you need to know about a subject in one spot at one time. You've got to do a little bit of work, and God leaves us the responsibility of doing that work. He broke the Bible up and put pieces here, there, and yonder through it, so you have to search in this place, that place, and the other place to build your fund of knowledge. You're not going to find it without a little bit of effort on your part. Precept must be upon precept. Line upon line, here a little and there a little. So the study of allegories is a very interesting and rewarding way to understand God and the Bible, but work is required in order to be able to do that.